Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. I'm joined in the studio today for Research Matters by Dr. Ruth Faltzon and Ms. Claire Ajous, and they are here to speak about an important initiative of the Department of Psychology. Dr. Faltzon, can you tell us a little bit about the initiative, about the groups that are involved, because it's not just the Department of Psychology?
That's right. First of all, the theme is dyslexia, drama and self-esteem. And part of my lecturing involves dyslexia, and I always like to invite parents to come and talk about their experience, etc. And I called Mathis Caulfield, whom I had seen act with Claire about a year ago, and I spoke to him with the possibility of coming over to do a one-hour lecture. And basically from this one-hour lecture came out this event. And when he started speaking to me and sort of his experience, my experiences, I believe a lot in synergy. I like working with people, I like teamwork, and I believe the more people we are, the more ideas come in. So I told him, okay, Matthew, you're talking about self-esteem, so I want to do this initiative, but it involves a lot of work, and we can be creative together. And so I asked the Department of Educational Studies, I am basically Prof. Carmel Borge, we're working too, and then I also asked the PSD Association, because there's self-esteem involved.
PSD for our
Personal business. And Social Development. In Malta we have a subject called Personal and Social Development, and we have PSD specialists, and they formed a professional association, which I am part of, and also the Malta Dyslexia Association, which I am part of. And so together, and because a lot of the work is voluntary with regard to the organization, we can create more people to help and more time to go into details with the planning. Also, what is unusual about such a performance is because we've split it up into three. We have performances for policymakers and professionals. We have performances for fourth and fifth formers, and we have a performance for the general public. And we're also going to do it both in Malta and in Gozo. So we're trying to expose this performance to as many people as possible. Another original thing, and Claire will talk about it, is it's not a play. It is an autobiographical performance, because Matthew, who's also published a couple of books, because you don't have to be non-dyslexic to write very interesting books. And it's not only just a play, it's an autobiographical performance, and sort of there's a lot of him inside. And that is Claire's role in this performance, that she really tried to bring this up. And I've seen it myself, so even if there are people who are not interested at all in dyslexia, but are interested in art, they would, I think, enjoy this performance, even from that perspective alone.
Well, before going into the actual performance, and I speak to Claire, I'm sure she can give us a bit of a background about the Matthew Scuffield, the protagonist. Could you give us a little bit of an explanation as to what dyslexia really is?
Okay. Just, to start from the beginning for people who are very precise, dyslexia is coming from the Greek. Dys means difficulty with, lexia is words. So difficulty with words. And dyslexia is difficulty to learn how to read and write. Or rather, I would say, a need to be taught how to read and write in a different way. So most people, if you say, what's dyslexia? Oh, it's difficulty to write. Oh, it's mixing up the B's and the D's. Oh, it's difficulty with spelling, which are all true. However, I specifically am saying a profile of dyslexia. I do not think that dyslexia should be regarded as a disability. If anything, it is an imposed cultural handicap, if you want to call it like that, because if everybody were to be asked to sing at school, half of us would be disabled. If everybody were to have to draw at school, half of us would be disabled. So it is an issue of what the culture, how it is put on us. Because research is finding that people with dyslexia have a different brain, not a disabled brain, a different brain, which also allows them to do other things. And what is interesting, if you look at a lot of people who have made a big, big impact from different spheres in the last century, they all had a profile of dyslexia. Just to mention a few. Electricity, Thomas Edison. Telephone, again, he was dyslexic and his name escapes me. Now, we have Churchill in politics. Einstein, who is the icon of science, and the list goes on and on. And by telephone, Sir Graham Bell, Alexander Graham Bell. And if you look at the second most popular author that is sold, Agatha Christie, she had dyslexia as well. She had a profile of dyslexia. Well. And I would dare say that the way she concluded her novels, the way she created the solutions for her novels, is because she has a profile of dyslexia. Because people with dyslexia have a different creativity, a different way of looking at things. They're very visual. In fact, if research shows that they make very good plastic surgeons and they make very good architects simply because of the way they visualize things. So we're talking about a different brain, which can go up to 10 to 12 to 20% of the population, depending on how wide your definition of dyslexia is. So I do dare say, instead of these kids, you know, not appreciating them at school, we have to see the value. Because some, you know, parents, I end up telling parents, look, some kids are not made out to be good 14-year-olds, but they'll be excellent 35-year-olds. And if the listeners were to think, you know, think of someone who is such a success now, and you look at him and say, how could he have become a success? He was so unsuccessful at school. And I say the school was unsuccessful at understanding what he or she were able to do. And these are stories. If people Google dyslexia famous people, you will see their stories over and over again. Now, why self-esteem, not just dyslexia? It's because of these stories. It's because if you look at, for example, a famous quote that Hans Christian Andersen wrote, who again was dyslexic, he talks about those were bitter times. He recalls his school as bitter times, which is a bit sad when you look at that these children have to spend 12 years for 6 hours a day. And not only that, by nature we don't like doing things we're not good at. So basically, if I know I'm not good at, I don't know, rollerblading, which I tried with my kids, I stop doing it. Yet these kids, in spite of not being able to do that, have to be faced with what they're not good at day in, day out. Not only that, they are faced with that. They are not supported enough, they are not understood enough, and they are told that it's easy. So not only is it difficult for me, it seems to be easy, so where am I there? So in these 25 years I've been working with just children and adolescents, all I can say is I've gained a lot of respect for them. That's the only thing. So that's why I wanted to bring up self-esteem. And also because if you look at the literature, there's little literature on it when compared to the body of literature, which is focused on specific reading and writing. So we're focusing on that. And also maybe because I teach PSD, I'm the teacher trainer at University of PSD, and it's the way I could link my two areas.
Lately, dyslexia has become a little bit of a buzzword in the mm-hmm. sense that it's certain people seem to be much more aware of it mm-hmm. now than they were before. Mm-hmm. I think that children who have these type of problems are given some help. Do you feel that things have not been carried down that path enough? Is there not enough help? Clearly you feel that there isn't enough mm-hmm. awareness. Why do you feel that there's need for coming up with these novel ideas about mm-hmm. how to create awareness?
Okay, because most of the time, everybody, I would say most people would know dyslexia has difficulty with reading and writing, but it stops there. They do not fathom what it really means and what it brings along. Let me give you an example. It brings a lot of difficulty with copying, and it's one of the most difficult things I come up in school when telling them this child can't copy. If I'm at a restaurant and I'm an adult, I may not be able to order food, so it's going to affect my social life as well. And that is why I wanted to be more open, because I think, in spite of people knowing about it, it's still considered, I'd better not say I have a profile of dyslexia. And my dream is that people will be able to say, I have a profile of dyslexia, as easy as people were to say, I wear glasses. You know, in my time, when I was young, people may have joked if you wore glasses. And then I remember, for example, the effect Happy Days had when the Fonz wore glasses. They had thousands of letters in the States saying how good the Fonz did to wear glasses, because a lot of children are going to school with glasses with pride. So now we're here, and I want people to be able to say, I have a profile of dyslexia. And I have adults who dare not tell their employer that they have a profile of dyslexia because they are scared that they may be fired. Now it is their perception, but obviously my perception is formed by my experiences. So that is why I want more awareness. I want more awareness for people to truly understand what dyslexia brings along with. It's not just the reading and writing. It's organization difficulty. It may be difficulty telling the time. It may be difficulty remembering instructions. It may be that the teacher has to understand that I learn differently and I need to see things to learn. So there are a lot of issues. It's not the term. I think the term, Tricia, there's enough awareness that people know it means difficulty with reading and writing. But it's the true deep understanding of what that means in line with our topic, what it means and how it impinges on my self-esteem. For example, when I assess children, I insist with the parents that they send them to drama lessons. Because in drama, they really, it's a bit therapeutic for them. Because they're at par with their friends. And they can say, hey, I'm as good as the next. My son has a profile of dyslexia. And one of my proudest moments was when his drama teacher, I think, you know, he did a soliloquy of King John. Mm-hmm. And he learnt it. I read to him, he read himself, but he did the soliloquy of, and he did it extremely well. Well, I'm a parent. Mm-hmm. And the feeling that I did it, I accomplished it. And I do think that drama for every child, I do think it should be, you know, mandatory in all curricula. But especially for children with dyslexia, it really helps them come along.
Well,
it
talking
really...
about drama at this point, perhaps we can turn to Claire, the main protagonist of this event, this Matthew Schofield. Do tell us how you sort of got to know him, why he impressed you, and why you really felt that you wanted to get involved.
Yes, by all means. In fact, about a year ago, a bit more than a year ago, I was approached by a production company, and they told me that there was this actor that was taking part in their production, and he would make a good interviewee for my show, because I am always seeking to interview interesting people from all walks of life, especially people who might not have appeared before on TV. And obviously, Matthew... That's how I met you first. And as soon as we were doing the interview, I met him before and during the interview, there was a really good connection. You know, some people you really connect with when you ask them questions and then they reply. Not only was there a good connection, but also there was a difference in this person, which to me has always been, different people have always been intriguing to me. Rather than I fear them, they've always intrigued me and fascinated me, and I always want to learn more and whatnot. And this was the case with Matthew. Surely so, he was working at the same time on launching his book, which was called I Could Be Anyone. And he came up with the idea that instead of a normal book launch, we create something, me and him, we create, because he knew I was an actress as well, so he said, you know, we can create something to make it exciting. And I said, yes, why not? And not to give too much away, because otherwise we will reveal what the performance stroke autobiographical work which we are going to see involves. There's a part of me that is the interviewee. And in fact, my role, like Ruth said, is to bring out from Matthew his experience on dyslexia, because the book was primarily a 10-year challenge for Matthew to write, all about from his days of childhood, being brought up in Cambridge in a street full of scholars, amongst family full of very, very intelligent, what we call academically intelligent people. When someone then was, when a child is dyslexia and he's sent to the class where he's to begin his teenage years, which is not A or B or C or D, it's removed. You know, what an impact it had. And this is how the self-esteem then is tied in to someone who is dyslexic way back then. But through this experience, which is brought out in the performance, one is able to see not only this kind of profile, but also the impact it had throughout his years. And what I hope, that I think we all hope to achieve here once again during this week of performance, theatre forum and discussion, is to actually speak to the policymakers in a way that it's okay for you. I'm saying you because I'm not dyslexic, but I'll say the difference here. It's okay for people who are non-dyslexic to make rules and make education being taught in a certain way, but how many of them are actually talking and liaising with people who do truly have dyslexia in order to formulate a good system of education that the people of dyslexia are going to contribute from and are going to be taught from? And I think that we want to achieve this time, because when we did the performance a year and a half ago, we had a lot of interesting people coming to watch us. We had people from theater background, so because obviously Matthew then grew up and became an actor, and for many years he made his living out of acting. So we had the theatrical people coming to watch us. We had parents and people who were dyslexic who came to watch us, and it was a really nice crowd of people. They were all different from all walks of life. And what we realized, both me and Matthew, at that time, we hadn't even conceived the impact of what we were doing, because truly it was a launch of a book about someone's life. In reality, it was much more touching to people who either have family members who have a profile or dyslexia, or even they might not be aware that they themselves are different from the rest and have a problem with their self-esteem just because they are different. See, often...
Not necessarily
a profile of dyslexia, because let's face it, this could be like Ruth was saying, you know, you have a problem with wearing glasses, and unless you are empowered with why you wear glasses and what are the benefits if someone wears glasses, then you will never, as a child, grow up to feel fully confident.
What is it that this theatrical approach really manages to get? Mm-hmm. How does it manage to enter deeply into the lives of those people who are watching it?
In my opinion, first of all, they're so impassioned about it. Well, Claude Claire experienced it because of her relationship with Matthew, and Matthew himself, who, you know, who you can see his pain coming through, and his years of adolescence and his years of childhood and his pain coming through. I mean, when he says, and I walked across the meadows to the other school, which had to go to the comprehensive because he couldn't get into the grammar school. That, you know, and the way he says it, I mean, it really has to jerk your emotions. And that is why I wanted, because unless educators and policymakers feel the experience, if they leave it at the cognitive level and don't get the emotions into it, then we won't see any changes. Because I want that policymaker to understand that when you give that particular child a 15-minute homework, when you calculate 15 minutes homework, that means it's going to take him at least 45 minutes. Now, if there are four homeworks, that means 4 hours. And that means that kid is not going to sleep until 11. Now, unless you will dismiss it, but it's that kid's experience day in, day out. And if parents are going through that, it's their life, and it can take over the whole family life. In fact, some of my recommendation would be, listen, don't do that homework. It's not worth it staying until 11. You need to be a child. Or I have some parents tell me, no, I'm not sending him to after-school activities because he won't finish his homework. I said, no, those after-school activities are his life.
In fact, I, through working with Matthew, obviously I've heard many of his experiences, which have really enriched me in a way. I mean, and opened my eyes to other things. Drama, first and foremost, is a very strong truth. And no one can run away from the truth. So even when you're acting as an actress, you are still passionate and go very, very deep into discovering that person's characteristics that you are playing and become them eventually in order to do your performance and role believable. And we can't run away from the fact that that is very touching to people. So I think the importance of drama to deliver such a message is truly so. Now, to have someone present who is actually sharing his real experience, that's even more so the better. As for me, I mean, I was brought up in a normal system, so to speak, and okay, I had no problems with it, and I did not suffer because I was not, I had no profile of dyslexia, so I did not suffer any self-esteem problems. But when I went into drama at the age of 15, I did become much more open to different types of people. So for me, at this stage, to accept people and see different ways of how we can learn something is easy. And this is what I fear, that some people who might be doing the rules or the system or arranging the system might maybe lack, if I can say so. Because if they are not open and are enthusiastic and are intrigued by finding different ways how to say the same thing, if we are scared to explore these differences, or we are disheartened by the fact that maybe we might not finish the syllabus, so what if we don't finish the syllabus? What's important at that age when you're a kid? What met you? One of his experiences, what I remember him saying, is that he learned more from the builder that came to fix and do the maintenance of their home than he did at school. He learned not only like the actual how to fix things at home, but he also learned the human value. So where is the human value? If we need to finish a syllabus like a race and we're all racing to the end of the line, of course people are going to be left behind. Mm-hmm. But let's face it, when we're at school, when we're at that age, how many of us remember exactly what went on in each and every lesson and what we did in every exam?
We live in a society that likes to measure, and they like to measure normality, normalcy. And perhaps dyslexia is frightening for our policymakers, exactly because it is not actually measurable. If it can't be measured, then if somebody's making a fuss or... well, how do you know that they, if we let them off that homework, are they skiving? Are they, these are things that go on, I'm sure, in teachers' minds.
Mm-hmm. I think first, exactly, how to define measurement, and that is the big issue, because national exams, what they're measuring, what I like to say at university, and when I, you know, discuss with my students the issue of dyslexia, people not being able to come in, because I say, okay, so you have O-level English and Maltese. And I dare you just to stand up and speak either of them orally. And they won't be able to speak both orally. And these have O-level English. And they can't speak fluently in English, for example. These are university students. And they have their O-level. So my question is, what is our O-level measuring?
Exactly. Now, let's say, for example, because I had this experience, either one of those students had an experience 3 years down the line of having to study for a play, and it was in Maltese. I am sure, I will assure you, that because he would have had that experience, his fluency in Maltese or in whatever language would improve. Yes. That is how my fluency in English improved.
Yes.
I mean, when I was young, we did not speak English. I came from a Maltese family. So I spoke Maltese at home, at school, I read a lot of English books when I was young, but up until the age of 15, I can't say that my English was really, really fluent. I had a good background of it because of my pen friends in those times, but really and truly, when you are studying scripts for the purpose of doing something which you really truly love, then you will learn it.
But it's also querying, how are we teaching our children the languages? Are we teaching the languages? Because that is a big question for me. Now, I'm just talking about English and Maltese, and I'm very concerned that in our educational system we have big language problems. And if you have big language problems within the teaching community, then that's going to be transferred onto the children. But I can tell you stories. I have one particular boy. He is totally fluent in Italian, and his Italian teacher is very upset because he can't do his O-levels because he's severely dyslexic. And he's the best in Italian in his class. He uses him as his assistant. Yet, that boy's talents and fluency in the Italian language cannot be assessed at the moment in the island simply because we're bound to the pen and the paper. Now, I am not saying pen and paper are not important, but I am saying let's look at it within the perspective. Because even we've moved culturally, but even our obsession with spelling, for example, which is important to know how to spell, but in this day and age, I have the computer who does most of my spelling corrections in a way, and our exams are not reflecting that. And so when I say, listen, do we really have to account for spelling? People say, no, it's language, it has to be like that. But, well, you know, our top authors who had dyslexia are still writing, because language is not about spelling. Spelling is only a part of the original language.
If I may say so, I would really like to invite everyone to make their questions and use such an opportunity, because you spoke about fear. And I really feel that fear is when you don't know something. So if you don't know something, you're going to fear it. But here is an opportunity where you can hear someone's experience firsthand. Other people might speak firsthand. So when you don't know something, you ask, you be inquisitive, you inquire, you be open. And may this forum and theater be like that, because I think the opportunity can open up new doors,
right,
and which leads to action now.
So who are you inviting to this forum?
Well, we've invited members of parliament, college principals, people in the education directorate, anyone involved in education, people from the university as well. So we hope, and also from that, on that occasion, for professionals, there will also be teachers. So the policy workers are going to hear grassroots people talking as well.
So
Tuesday, March the 2nd are for the professionals. Then on in the morning of March the 3rd, it will be for 4th and 5th formers, so it will be for students. And in the evening of the same day, March the 3rd, it will be for the general public at 7:30.
Whereabouts?
At University Chaplaincy, Malta University Chapel. And then the next
we'll have information on our homepage of the
university website.
That's right.
And it's also being on the news, so we're really trying to advertise. And then the next day we'll be going to Gozo, and it will be held at the Ministry of Education. I think it's called Exhibition Hall in St. Francis Square, Victoria. And we're quite excited about that. We have a morning and an evening performance, because we felt that Gozo shouldn't be left out. I'm very particular about that. And also the performance will include a discussion afterwards, so people will have the opportunity to ask questions. There will be a panel of professionals, and there will also be a young adult with dyslexia who will be there, who I think is as professional and as expert as every other one here at university. So I think it will be exciting.
Jolly good. Well, thank you very, very much, Ruth Valtzon and Clara Jews, for coming on Research Matters today to tell us about this forum. Thank you so much.
I do hope you can join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.